their secret mountain lair somewhere in Colorado. This is the Image Doctors Photography Podcast with your hosts, Jason Odell and Rick Walker.
Hey everyone, I'm Jason Odell.
And I'm Rick Walker.
And welcome to another exciting episode of the Image Doctors Photography Podcast.
Woohoo!
Yay. Yes, don't drive off the road. Brace yourselves, folks. It's coming. What do we got today, Rick?
Well, we're going to talk a little bit about exposure, and this will be a multi-part thing. We're not going to promise when we do the other parts, but there will be other parts.
Right. Okay, well, that's good. And yeah, exposure is huge. So what we're going to focus on today, I think, is more of the philosophical side of digital exposure.
Mm-hmm.
And we're talking about digital exposure because we've already done, you know, once upon a time. We might mention film.
We might.
But this is mostly oriented towards digital. And, you know, one thing that we should probably start with then is just defining what we mean when we talk about exposure, right? Because
mm-hmm.
it's a lot of things to a lot of people. Okay. But at the end of the day, it's a combination of settings in your camera.
Uh-huh.
And those settings, and we assume you know them, there's three of them. There's the shutter speed,
mm-hmm.
how long the shutter's open. That's a time function. There's the aperture, which is a function of your lens, how wide the lens diaphragm can open up
mm-hmm.
or close down. And then there's a sensitivity of your camera sensor, which is referred to in the ISO setting.
Mm-hmm.
It used to be ASA once upon a time.
Mm-hmm.
But those three settings combine to let light into your camera and record an image on the sensor. At the end of the day, that's all exposure is.
Yep.
And depending on how you have those settings, the image can be brighter, darker, or somewhere in between. And a lot of exposure is going to depend on what it is that you're photographing, the conditions, how much light there is, how wide the dynamic range is in the scene, the difference between shadows and highlights. All these things play important roles in talking about exposure. But so let's get philosophical for a second and ask ourselves the question of what's a good exposure? Because now we can disagree.
We're not going to disagree,
but now we might find
pretend different, to.
Well,
that might be entertaining.
I think a lot of people think that the right exposure means that what comes out on the back of your camera is the finished product.
Mm-hmm.
And that's not wrong, but it's not necessarily always correct.
Why is it always so complicated?
I don't know, maybe too much coffee in the morning
could
or
be.
Something. But that's a great thing. And so one thing to keep in mind, is that the camera settings, you know, for your exposure, record data. I mean, you set mm-hmm. your camera, you take a picture, it's recording data from your sensor. And a lot of how you want the image to look from the final image, it doesn't have to end there. And I think that's what sometimes people forget. And this is really most true when you're processing or shooting in RAW,
mm-hmm.
Where you have more latitude to do stuff. But it's true for if you were shooting film or JPEG as well. You can adjust your images in post.
Mm-hmm.
And what you want to do, I think, at least the way I try to approach stuff most of the time, is to get the best quality data set that I can work with in post. But then again, my style of photography is more of the methodical, fine art, trying to get everything high fidelity, if you will.
And that
might not be
one way of doing things.
Exactly.
Out of many.
If you're taking snapshots, it's a different
mm-hmm.
story. So,
the other thing is that there are people, and we don't have this preference, but there are people that just like shooting JPEGs.
Sure.
And for them, it's all about getting the right settings in the camera and an exposure that as much as possible looks like the final image. Because if you start trying to alter JPEGs in post-processing much, you can do some, but then it starts looking weird in a hurry.
Right.
So you just don't have the flexibility. So if you try to get it right in camera, that's, you know, a good goal.
But getting it right in camera has different meanings to different kinds of shooting.
Yeah, I what I'm meaning there with JPEGs is the thing that you see on the LCD in the back or in the electronic viewfinder, or when you look at the JPEG on your monitor screen of your computer, it looks like what you wanted without any adjustments. That's kind of like the goal of shooting JPEGs.
Right. No, in other words, slide film.
Mm-hmm. Very much like slide film.
Very, very close to slide film.
Yeah.
And you know, that's it's a great point to bring up, that I actually have started in some of my online classes on teaching and workshops, I've started talking about the concept of two exposures. Not really exposures, but there's the exposure that records the data in the camera. That's the capture.
Mm-hmm.
And then there's the final output, which would be, you know, and to use old terminology, your print.
Mm-hmm.
The print and the negative were not the same thing.
Mm-hmm.
And this goes back to film. This goes back to, you know, old style photography, where you would capture something with film, but you would know to process it a certain way. You knew maybe you had to push or pull process, and then you would know that you were going to dodge and burn in a darkroom to get the final product. Mm-hmm. So that the final product does not have to match the tones of the final product, I should say, do not necessarily match the tones of the original capture.
Yeah.
So when we're talking about exposure, we're kind of like talking about the relative relationships between the tone values. Generally, you know, you want bright things to be bright, dark things to be dark, but you can expose differently and correct that later.
Mm-hmm. And just for our listeners who are the same ages or older than us, you know, a common thing like with negative film, whether it was black or white, black and white or color, is you had a tremendous amount of latitude toward overexposure.
Mm-hmm.
And I remember one of the things that would show people in the camera store that I worked in was a color print taken at, quote, the correct exposure.
Mm-hmm. Whatever that is. Yeah.
And then one stop over, and then two stops over, and then three stops over. And if you were using a competent lab, which we like to think that we had, they looked identical.
Mm-hmm.
And it was like, it doesn't matter. Now, if you shot one stop underexposed, it would start looking slightly muddy. Two stops under, it would start looking bad. You know, the latitude was very much toward overexposure. And the conclusion a lot of people reached is, oh, I don't really have to be that precise right. if I'm shooting color negative film. And that was true.
Right. Now, that's not the case with digital as much. In fact, it's kind of the other way around. With digital, if you overexpose based on the meter, you know, if things get pushed to the point and you're overexposing to the point where they blow out, they're gone.
You got nothing.
Yeah. And conversely, you can recover a fair bit of detail out of the shadows.
Mm-hmm.
Even if there's a little noise there, before things start to look bad.
Right.
So with digital, we have this general idea that highlights tend to be sacrosanct. In other words, they must be protected at all costs. What does that mean? It means that when you look at your exposure, you don't want to see clipping in the highlights. So
unless you artistically want it.
Yeah. So there's
like, a high key shot.
Correct.
A wedding shot where everyone is wearing white and you want it to be light and airy, and it's perfectly fine having huge portions of the image completely blown out. And it looks fine. Looks like it should.
Right, because it's a creative
and technique. Trying to get detail in those areas would just make things look gray and weird.
Right, right. No, that's a good point. So I guess one thing when it comes to digital exposure that everyone ought to be able to you know, the one thing we should talk about from a technical standpoint is the histogram, mm-hmm. your friend, the histogram.
Oh, yeah.
And if you don't know how to use a histogram, you know, we'll give you the quick crash course here. But the histogram is a diagnostic tool that plots all of the counts of all the tone values on sort of in a graphical format. And when you review your image, you can look at this. And it's not important to see the shape of the histogram, but the histogram will tell you if you have a lot of dark tones and a lot of bright tones or a lot of mid-tones and just everything in between. So when you look at a histogram, which is this graph on the back of your camera, all you need to know about is that it's the horizontal or x-axis goes from black on the left to pure white on the right. And if you look at your histogram and you see something that is piled up on one side or the other, you've probably got an exposure adjustment coming along.
Or at least something you need to think about.
Right. It should be a warning,
yeah.
potentially, or a little, let me think about this. And where you really don't want to see stuff spiking or piled up is on the right side of the histogram. In other words, the highlights.
Unless you're doing, you know, what we talked about
earlier. Right. Creative override. That's yeah. that's okay. Because even with RAW, while you can recover some highlights, you still recover shadows better.
Yeah.
Now, this gets into a great question of, well, then how should I expose? Should I just underexpose everything so that I don't clip any highlights?
No.
Why not?
Well, you said underexpose,
right,
as
right.
opposed to correctly expose.
Correct, right. So some people, in your zealousness to protect highlights at all cost, you might be tempted to just dial in, you know, exposure settings that keep the highlights from ever clipping. You know, and in some cases, that means the highlights might be somewhere towards the middle of your histogram. Mm-hmm. But that's not a correct exposure either, because you're going to find that most of the detail is now down in those shadows where you have to bring them out to correct your exposure and you get a lot of noise. So one technique that a lot of that was sort of popularized in the mid-2000s when digital cameras were still pretty new was something called exposing to the right, in which you would try to get the exposure in the camera not overexposed, but as far over on the right on the histogram as you could get without clipping.
This was for RAW shooting.
And for RAW shooting.
Yeah, not JPEGs.
Not JPEGs. This is for RAW. And it has some advantages and it has some disadvantages. The advantage is that as long as you're not clipping the highlights, you're actually recording better fidelity data, less noise, because there's just more data points up in the bright tones than there are in the shadow
right.
tones. It's a nature of the technology. The downside is that you're going to have to adjust every image and do what would be called normalizing it, you know, bring the exposure back down, make the shadows and the highlights be where they're supposed to be in post. So you're going to have to do post on this. And it really only works best when you're using a fixed ISO, not an automatic where that's changing. And it tends to work the best at your lowest ISOs.
Yeah, because otherwise, you know, let's just say your lowest ISO in your camera, your normal one, normal lowest is 100.
Mm-hmm.
And you're shooting at 200 and you use the expose to the right technique and, you know, push the tones to the right without blowing them out. And you end up with an extra stop of exposure relative to what your meter might have said. Well, that's the same as exposing it at ISO 100 at the meter reading. There's no benefit whatsoever.
Mm-hmm.
Zippo.
Right.
There's some quirks in some cameras where they have gain things that come in at different ISOs, but
right.
in general, there isn't a whole lot of benefit.
Well,
any.
And realistically, this kind of shooting is best done when you're on a tripod, because what you want to do is extend your shutter speed rather than change your aperture.
Mm-hmm.
Your aperture is your depth of field control, et cetera, et cetera. So to extend, to expose to the right, meaning you're going to slightly overexpose based on what the meter might tell you, would be use a longer shutter speed. And that has its own consequences and things that, you know, you might get motion blur. And so if you're trying to shoot action, this doesn't work whatsoever. But it does, but it is one example of a situation where exposing differently than in the camera than what you might have set it for the output works. But again, that's raw only. Why doesn't that work with JPEG? I mean, you could try it with JPEG, but with JPEG, you have a totally different scenario, right?
Yeah. And you know, the problem is to get the size of the files down, which is one of the goals of JPEGs. There's a technique that's used in the processing in the camera called compression. And what it does is it, you know, essentially kind of looks for things that are similar or about the same and just kind of says, yeah, those are all about the same. They're not really different. They're pretty much the same. And that, and therefore it's a lot.
You're throwing away data.
Yeah. But it, it's, it makes the amount of data that you have a whole lot smaller. It's like, you know, you could look at a wall in the room that we're recording and just say, it's all the same color. That's a whole lot simpler and smaller thing to say, or shorter thing to say, than to go through and say, the top left inch is this bright, and if you go to the right one inch, it's about the same, and one more inch to the right, it's the same. It takes up a lot of time and storage space. But,
so,
but what happens is, because of that, you start trying to move things around, and you start getting weird artifacts and banding and all sorts of stuff. So you can only alter JPEG so much in post-processing.
Right. And that's why we shoot RAW, but, you know, it's not required. But
no.
And it can be fun to do. If you're not going to do a lot of processing or you don't want to do processing, then shooting in JPEG is, you know, it's a totally viable option. So, you know, lots of different ways to expose. But in general, being able to look at your histogram, and you can do this either after you've captured the image, that's the traditional way, the chimping way, or if you have a mirrorless camera, you can often get a live, real-time histogram. There's an interesting thing about histograms, and that is they're not perfect either. It's not something to obsess about, but it's something to be aware of. And that is the histogram is based on a JPEG and not on the actual raw sensor data. And what it means is there's a slight disconnect between what the histogram on the camera shows and what you might have actually captured. In fact, most of the time, what you'll find is that if a histogram is barely clipping, you know, just the tiniest clipping a little bit on your camera, when you bring it into raw, you it won't be clipping at all.
Yeah, you might have a whole stop. At least of room.
And one thing to really be cautious of is that not only is the histogram based on a JPEG, but that JPEG is based on the style settings you have in your camera. So a lot of cameras have things to set like vivid or portrait or, you know, different looks. And again, these looks are based on, in some cases, different film styles, like Fuji cameras have the Velvia look and the Provia look, whatever. But they're different contrast, different saturations, different colors. And if you use a profile that has higher contrast, like a Vivid or a Landscape, your histogram is going to look different.
It'll clip a lot sooner.
It will clip sooner, even though the underlying data for the image is
the same
between, you could take the same picture, three different styles. The exposure values won't change. The exposure settings don't change, but the three histograms would look slightly different. So it's not something to freak out about, but it's something to be aware of. And if you're really trying to have the a histogram in the field that gives you a more of a reflection of what your raw data is, you have to set your camera to a really low contrast setting, like neutral or flat. And And the unfortunate thing about that is it kind of looks crummy on the back of your
screen. And sometimes the autofocus has trouble too.
Yeah, if it's a live view or a mirrorless camera, it can affect your autofocus. Yeah. So, I mean, there's drawbacks to this. But I guess what we're kind of getting at is that you have to include your recording medium. Am I shooting RAW? Am I shooting JPEG? Am I doing something creative? Or am I trying to get... Am I going to work on this image later in post and I want to get a certain quality of data? Or do I want to just have something that's good to go?
Yeah.
And that should guide how you set your exposure settings in your camera. Another thing is to keep in mind the subject. It is one thing to be shooting a still life or a landscape with a tripod where maybe a 2 second exposure is perfectly fine.
Yeah.
That won't work shooting sports or wildlife or birds or whatever, where you need to be where your exposure is not constrained by your aperture, but it's going to be constrained by the fact that you need to use a fast shutter speed. So that has impacts on exposure. So when you're shooting sports or something, you're more likely to try to get it closer to the final output exposure in the camera. And sure, yeah, maybe there's some room for a little processing, of course, if you have time. But you don't have the degrees of freedom when you're trying to shoot action at 2/1000th of a second that right. you would with a landscape. You can say, oh, I can overexpose this a little bit, you know, right. and do that.
I think one thing that's worth mentioning, because I've heard this a few times too, and this pertains to RAW files, not JPEGs. But, you know, in the past with slide film, there was a technique of underexposing mm-hmm. the image a little bit. It was really popular with Kodachrome in particular. And what it would do is it would make your image look a little bit punchier, and because you were getting a little bit more clipping on the black side, but the colors would look a little bit more vibrant too.
Yes, a little extra saturation.
Yeah. And that's not the case if you're shooting RAW. As long as you're not blowing out the highlights, it doesn't help you to underexpose that way. It just creates right. noise.
Right.
What you want to do is do all the work in post-processing, bring down the exposure, set the saturation or vibrance the way you want, but you don't get better results by underexposing. You know, that was a color slide film.
That's a great tip. Yeah, I remember doing that,
yeah.
actually.
Oh, yeah.
It was very common.
It was the National advice. Geographic look.
Yeah, well, and it was very typical advice. You know, underexposed by a third of a stop, you get a yeah. little better saturation, it'll look mm-hmm. a little nicer. Yeah. But that was a case where with slide film, somewhat like JPEG, only much more restrictive, where the final output literally was whatever your camera settings were, because you didn't have any latitude to do anything with your processing.
Yeah.
And with a slide, you weren't going, you know, you have a transparency, you weren't going to do darkroom work with it either.
No, I mean, you could push the film a little bit, and that was about it.
Mm-hmm.
But it wasn't a creative thing so much as it was just a way of getting a higher ISO.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I would agree. So that definitely falls in the category of one-time good advice that is no longer applicable to digital photography. So, anyway, this has sort of been an introductory topic today about
rambling.
Rambling. Yeah, exactly. But to sort of sum it up, I mean, what we've talked about is that if you learned one thing from today's episode,
it's confusing.
Right. But yeah, your exposure settings in your camera don't have to be perfect. It depends on your subject. It depends on what you're trying. It depends on your intent. And with digital, as long as you don't wildly clip highlights, you're better off pulling up shadows than you are, you know, and again, we're talking within limits, of course.
Mm-hmm.
And your subject, and if you learn one thing to, you know, between now and our next episode is go and look at your histogram. And make sure you understand what it's telling you. And really all you need to understand is that it tells you where the bright tones are being recorded and where the dark tones are being recorded on your sensor. And your histogram does not have to match your final image.
Right.
Because you can move those things around in post. And I think if you learn those things, then next time or in a future episode, we will talk about some of the ways we can actually calculate the exposure and set the exposure on our cameras. So this includes things like we'll have a topic on metering and a topic on exposure modes. Mm-hmm. So we'll bring you those in the future. Until next time, we appreciate all the comments and feedback we get from you at our Facebook page. That's facebook.com/imagedoctors. And so if you've got a question for us, if we've hurt your head or you need some clarification, just drop us a note, leave us a comment on the show for this week, and we will do our best to answer them. Anything else, Rick?
I don't think so.
All right. Well, then until next time, it's been another great episode with you guys. Thanks for listening, and we'll see you soon.
All right. Bye-bye.